This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. President Trump has long declared his love of coal, and he's promised to revive the industry. It's a common theme at his rallies, including one last week in West Virginia.
But we love clean, beautiful West Virginia coal. We love it. Right. And you know, that's indestructible stuff. In times of war, in times of conflict, you can blow up those windmills. They fall down real quick. You can blow up those pipelines. They go like this, and you're not going to fix them too fast. You can do a lot of things to those solar panels, but you know what you can't hurt? Coal. You can do whatever you want to coal. Very important.
Well, it seems that one thing can hurt coal and has hurt it. Market forces. Cheap natural gas, wind, and solar are driving coal out of the energy market. Last week, the Environmental Protection Agency released the Affordable Clean Energy Rule, also known as the ACE Rule. It would relax pollution regulations on coal-fired power plants. Now, that story got buried last week because of the avalanche of news with Paul Manafort and Michael Cohen, but this is a big deal, so we decided to come back and talk about it in depth today. What are the environmental and health risks associated with loosening these regulations, and will this proposed change make coal more competitive in the energy market? We'll discuss it after this.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Indeed. When it comes to hiring, you don't have time to waste. You need help getting your short list of qualified candidates fast. With Indeed, post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates. And when you need to hire fast, accelerate your results with sponsored jobs. New users can try for free when you sign up at Indeed.com/NPR podcast. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
This is Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. The Emmy Awards are coming up, so this week we're listening back to interviews with some nominees and people whose shows are nominated, like Issa Rae, Jake Tapper, Brian Tyree Henry, Tim Gunn, and Stephen Colbert. So check out this week's Emmy series on Fresh Air.
Joining us in studio is Coral Davenport, who covers energy and the environment for the New York Times. Coral, welcome back to 1A.
Hi, great to be with you.
And joining us from Wyoming Public Radio is Robert Godby, an associate professor from the University of Wyoming's Department of Economics. He focuses on the economics of the coal industry. Robert, thanks for being with us.
I'm glad to be here.
Coral Davenport, let me start with you. Before we get to this new rule, let's talk about the rule that it is replacing, the Clean Power Plan from the Obama administration. Here is President Obama announcing the plan back in 2015.
Right now, our power plants are the source of about a third of America's carbon pollution. That's more pollution than our cars, our airplanes, and our homes generate combined. That pollution contributes to climate change, which degrades the air our kids breathe. But there have never been federal limits on the amount of carbon that power plants can dump into the air. Think about that. We limit the amount of toxic chemicals like mercury and sulfur and arsenic in our air or our water, and we're better off for it. But existing power plants can still dump unlimited amounts of harmful carbon pollution into the air.
That was President Obama announcing the Clean Power Plan back in 2015. Coral, what exactly was the Clean Power Plan? What would it have done if it had not been tied up in court?
So the Clean Power Plan really was a landmark, historic piece of policy. It was the first time it was a set of EPA regulations, and it marked the first time that the United States had put forth any kind of regulation on the primary cause of global warming. And it's really important to focus, you know, it wasn't really about clean air or the air we breathe or coughing or lung disease. It was about global warming, climate change. And so the Clean Power Plan was put forth by the EPA. It was designed to cut global warming pollution, greenhouse gases, from power plants by 32% from 2005 levels by 2030. That's a really big deal. It assigned every state a level by which they had to cut their carbon pollution. And then it said to states, you can figure out, you can do sort of all kinds of different ways, whatever you can figure out to meet those targets, you can do. You can shut down coal plants. You can build new windmills. You can engage in cap and trade programs. But you have to meet these targets. And so this was a very legally creative plan. Nothing like this had been seen before. It was intensely controversial. And if it had ever been implemented, it would have been the biggest thing that the U.S. has ever done to cut global warming pollution.
Is its legal creativity part of why it got tied up in court and was never really implemented?
Exactly. It was historic in many ways, both in terms of the first time we had seen such a major effort to address climate change, and yes, in the way that it interpreted the law. And what ended up happening was the many legal opponents of it, over two dozen states, coal groups, industry groups, sued, and the Supreme Court took the highly unusual step of blocking implementation of the Clean Power Plan until all the legal cases against it were resolved. The thinking on this was that it was surely going to come to the Supreme Court, and it was such a sort of questionable, creative, controversial interpretation of the law that it really wasn't clear how it was going to end up. So it's never actually been implemented.
Let's talk a little bit more about the economics of coal, Rob. Brandon asked on our Facebook page, is coal unaffordable because of other energy sources, or are the other sources more affordable because of the regulations that were thrust upon the coal industry? Give us a sense of the economics of coal compared to other sources of energy.
Yeah, so that's a great question. So certainly coal is regulated. It's never been cleaner than it is now, but it still creates a lot of pollutants. But when you look at the economics of the operations of power plants, the cheapest source of new generation, if you were building a new generator today, in many parts of the country, you would choose wind just on the basis of cost.
Wind is the least expensive?
Wind is the least expensive where you can use it. Now, of course, not everybody has good wind resources, particularly in the Southeast. If you weren't going to use wind, then right now, if you look at the costs, it's a toss-up between solar and natural gas. And, of course, natural gas is available all over the country, and natural gas has been incredibly cheap for the last decade since the fracking revolution. And so basically, just on the basis of economics, the cheapest sources of electricity are renewables and natural gas, and coal is behind those.
And but do regulations have anything to do with the higher cost of coal, or is coal just inherently more expensive?
So some regulations, certainly regulations, make coal more expensive. So, for example, the fact that you have to control your sulfur dioxide emissions or nitrogen oxide emissions without those scrubbers. Those have been required since the 1970s. And basically, there's been major human health benefits from that. So we don't really question that.
And I'm sorry, what is a scrubber?
So a scrubber is basically a pollution control. It's just kind of a term that people use to, you know, take the pollutants out of the flow that goes up the stack.
Gotcha. Drew in Little Rock, Arkansas emails, clean coal sounds like an oxymoron. What is clean coal and what makes it clean? Coral?
Yeah, clean coal is kind of a meaningless term. I think it means whatever the person who is talking about it would like it to mean. And there's a couple of different things that people mean when they use that, but they're not the same, and that's why I think it's sort of an empty term. One could be, you know, Rob at the University of Wyoming said coal has never been cleaner, and what he means by that is that throughout the 70s, 80s, and 90s, under existing laws, electric utilities have been required to put in this technology called scrubbers. Mm-hmm. It's a thing you stick in the smokestacks, and it pulls out the really nastiest part of the burning coal that goes out in the air, the stuff that makes us sick, smog, sulfur dioxide, nitrogen oxide, mercury. So this technology, scrubbers, allows you to burn coal without putting that kind of pollution in the air. But it doesn't do anything for carbon dioxide, which causes global warming. Nothing.
We're going to be talking about the Trump administration's proposal, the Affordable Clean Energy Rule. What's the biggest difference between this ACE rule and the Clean Power Plan?
Clean Power Plan would have cut greenhouse gas emissions from coal-fired power plants 32% from 2005 levels by 2030. The Trump plan would probably cut levels about 1%.
But they both rely on kind of a state-federal split in terms of regulation.
And the difference there is Clean Power Plan gave targets to states, said you can meet them. Trump plan, the ACE plan, no targets. Just do what you want.
We will hear from the EPA administrator who's overseeing that plan momentarily. But first, we say thanks to Robert Godby of the University of Wyoming's director, University of Wyoming Center for Energy Economics and Public Policy. Robert, thanks very much for talking to us.
Thank you.
Before we started our program earlier this morning, we spoke with Bill Wareham. He's the assistant administrator for the EPA's Office of Air and Radiation. He's the guy who's overseeing this new rule for the Trump administration. It's his first broadcast interview since the Trump administration released the rule. Here is our conversation from earlier this morning.
Thank you very much.
Give us a sense of the logic behind this plan. From what I understand, it would give states more control over coal power plants and the pollution they produce. But pollution doesn't stop at state borders, which was some of the logic behind dealing with coal plants on a national level. Why give the states more power?
Well, for two primary reasons. One, that's what the law requires. This part of the law is, and this law, of course, is the Clean Air Act, and it's very specific. It says the federal government is supposed to set up a framework of regulation, but the states have direct responsibility for developing the standards that apply to individual plants and implementing those standards through state regulations. Now, you know, we have a role as the federal government. As I said, we set up a framework of regulations to govern, you know, the type of regulations and standards that the states put in place. And then once the state develops this regulation, we have to review it and make sure it's approvable. But once we've approved state plans, it's the responsibility of states to develop those rules and the responsibility of states to implement those rules. And the law is very clear on that point.
Who gets to be the final arbiter of what the standard is for America's pollution, though? I mean, isn't that the EPA's role?
Well, the Clean Air Act was intentionally designed by Congress, with the idea of cooperative federalism. So a fundamental piece of the Clean Air Act is that responsibility is intentionally divided between the federal government and the state governments. So in this case, we both have a role. The federal government sets up the broad framework of the regulations, and we have to review and approve state programs. But by law, states are directly responsible for figuring out what standards apply according to the framework we establish, of course. And then states are responsible for implementing the standards they develop.
I'm sure you know that there are a number of criticisms of this new plan, the Affordable Clean Energy Rule. The EPA's own analysis showed that there would be more premature deaths from the impacts of pollution. And it seems like the amount of pollution that's taken out of the atmosphere under this proposed rule would be less than the forecast for the Clean Power Plan from the Obama administration. With all that in mind, how is this a good idea?
Well, I would respectfully disagree with the characterization. First of all, we're not giving anything away. And the problem people are having when they look at the analysis is they forget that this is one of many, many regulations that we implement under the Clean Air Act. So this regulation is directed at reducing greenhouse gas emissions from power plants, and that's exactly what it would do. You know, it's true that regulations like this will have, you know, a secondary effect of, you know, affecting emissions of other pollutants, but we have ample and abundant regulatory authority to deal with all of the pollution that we're responsible for under the Clean Air Act. And in this case, the proposed ACE rule would be very effective in dealing with greenhouse gas emissions from power plants, and it would complement the broad suite of other very aggressive standards we have in place for other types of pollution.
So which plan would take more pollution out of the atmosphere, the Trump administration's plan or the Obama administration's plan?
Oh, the ACE rule, without a doubt, the Trump administration plan, because the Obama administration plan never got implemented. So it was promulgated as a regulation and immediately stayed by the U.S. Supreme Court in an unprecedented move by the court. So it's not even a fair comparison to say the Trump, you know, the Obama rule would get X and the Trump rule would get Y, because in fact the Obama rule has never seen the light of day.
But the forecast for the Obama rule was better than for yours.
But again, it's a false comparison, because however good the idea might be, you know, as some people see it, it never saw the light of day. The U.S. Supreme Court stopped it in its tracks.
I think there's a fair amount of concern from some folks about the nature of the regulation and the people who are promulgating it. It's no secret that you have worked as an attorney for a number of energy companies in the past, and a regulation like this is something that has been kind of on their wish list for some time. I wonder how you view that in terms of this argument that now the foxes are guarding the hen house when it comes to our environment.
Oh, I completely disagree. I take my responsibilities incredibly, incredibly seriously here at US EPA. And we have an important job, and our job is to protect human health and the environment. There's no doubt about it, and we do that as well as we can. But our job is to do that as smartly and efficiently as we possibly can. So we try to find that sweet spot where we accomplish what we need to under the Clean Air Act. We protect human health and the environment, but we don't overdo it. And we do it smart, and we do it clean, and we do it efficient, and I think we can have it all.
But why should the American people trust, frankly, that folks who have direct past ties to the industry are trustworthy with guarding the environment? I mean, these companies may not be as environmentally friendly as they are, even, if government did not compel them to be so. Why should we have faith in this being the right way to go about it?
Because I care very deeply and my colleagues care very deeply. I don't have to be here. Nobody's paying me to be here except the people of the United States. So, again, I take their responsibility very, very seriously. And you have to remember, we're regulating greenhouse gases here. You know, there are a lot of people out there that said we should walk away from this completely. They said we should reverse the endangerment finding. They should said we should reverse the CPP and never come back. And that's not what we're doing. That's not the right thing. That's not what the law requires. And we're putting in place a very aggressive but a very sensible plan that makes real progress.
And do we have a responsibility as Americans to save or help the coal industry? Coal is going on its way out. I mean, even energy companies are moving away from coal. Why help the coal industry? Why is coal worth saving?
Well, again, this is not an exercise in helping the coal industry. That's not what this is about. This is an exercise in being as smart as we possibly can and effective as we possibly can in regulating. What we're not doing, which is what the Obama administration did, is put a thumb on the scale. They actively tried to put the coal industry out of business.
What's wrong with that? I guess that's what I'm asking. And I know I got to let you go, but I guess what I'm asking is, what's wrong with letting coal go in favor of cleaner sources of energy?
Right, but there's a difference between letting the market decide and let people decide how they want to generate power versus using the federal government power to push people out of business. We're not pushing anybody out of business, but we're not favoring anybody. We're letting the market decide. And when you look at the market as a whole, there's a big shift. I mean, there's a fundamental change happening as we speak, as we're watching in the power sector. And what's happening is American ingenuity has allowed for the production of phenomenal amounts of good, clean, cheap natural gas, and the power industry is responding. And what you're seeing is a shift out of coal, a shift out of oil, a shift into gas, and a corresponding but lesser shift into renewables. And the overall effect, you know, without the hand of government touching it, is you're seeing a fundamental shift in the power sector. So, you know, that's what we believe. We believe that you know, we should let the markets operate. In this case, the markets are operating in a way that achieves real efficiencies from an economic standpoint, makes for a lot of cheap power, which is great for this country, but at the same time is achieving our environmental goals and you know, without the help and without the aid and without the heavy hand of federal regulation.
Bill Wareham, the Assistant Administrator for the EPA's Office of Air and Radiation. Bill, I know you got a tight schedule, but I appreciate you making time for us. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Joshua. Really appreciate it.
Let's go back now to Coral Davenport of the New York Times. Coral, reactions to what we heard from Mr. Wareham?
Sure. A couple of things. Mr. Wareham talked about the change in this rule, and he said, you know, the federal government is supposed to set up a framework and then put the responsibility on the states to develop the rules. He might as well have been describing the Clean Power Plan that they just replaced.
I was just going to ask you, that sounds exactly like the previous plan.
There's a key difference. You know, the Clean Power Plan, the framework was very clear. It had a lot of numbers. You know, it said that the target, the benchmark, is cut greenhouse gas emissions 32% from 2005 levels by 2030. And then again, it assigned top-level targets to each state. You know, one state has to cut their emissions by 17%, another state by 20 or 30%. And then it stopped. It said, you know, pretty much you go figure out how to do this. That's exactly what the Clean Power Plan did. And so by that metric, one might question why it would need to be changed. Because if you look at the Trump plan, the ACE plan, the Affordable Clean Energy Plan, they have said essentially states can do what you want, but there's no targets. There's no numbers. There's no you know, it's a regulation without any regulatory target or number that they have to reach.
So it kind of says do something, but it doesn't say how much something to be done.
Right. I mean, I would posit that based on Mr. Wareham's sort of description of what the law says you have to do, you know, he says the federal government is supposed to set up this framework. Well, you know, this plan does seem to be lacking in that piece of it. One other question that was raised when I heard him talking is he said, you know, something that really jumped out at us when we saw the proposal from this plan and you asked him about it is that the plan's own analysis says that it will lead to 1,400 premature deaths a year. That's a really big deal. Mr. Wareham said, well, that's true that under this plan, you will see an increase of hazardous pollutants that contribute to illness and death. And he said, but that will be addressed by other regulations. And I would question that because there are already, as we've talked about earlier on the program, many stringent regulations on coal fire pollution already in place under the Clean Air Act. So I would ask, is this administration proposing to put new or tougher regulations on the coal industry that we've never heard about? Because I know that already since he's been in office, Mr. Wareham has proposed loosening a number of other specific Clean Air Act regulations on pollutions from smokestacks. So I'm not clear on where these tougher additional regulations would come from.
As we've noted, this rule would be a successor or a replacement to the Clean Power Plan from the Obama administration. Let's bring in another voice for reaction, someone who was a key architect of the Clean Power Plan. Joseph Goffman is executive director of Harvard's Environmental Energy and Law Program and a former official at the EPA. Joseph, welcome to 1A.
Thank you very much, Joshua.
Love to get your thoughts on what we heard from Mr. Wareham, particularly because you were involved in the plan that the ACE rule is designed to replace.
Well, let me pick up on a point that Coral Davenport just made. Mr. Wareham claims that other authorities, not part of the ACE rule, can be counted on to address the pollution increases that might occur under the ACE rule. But one thing to know is that the ACE rule includes an additional proposal, and it's a proposal to drive a loophole into one of the key authorities that the EPA and the states have long relied on to prevent pollution increases when changes are made at power plants that result in pollution increases. I think what people need to recognize is that Mr. Wareham is hosting a Halloween and August party, because the rule really boils down to two subsidies for the coal industry, masquerading as a climate change and pollution rule. One subsidy takes the form of the requirements of the rule itself, which would instigate utilities and states to focus on ways to put more money into otherwise uneconomic coal plants. The other subsidy is takes the form of the degradation of air quality, because as I said, the rule also contains a loophole in one of the key authorities that has long been in place to restrain increases in air pollution in local communities.
We'll get back to talking about clean power in just a moment. Stay close.
This message comes from NPR sponsor ADT. America's trusted home security company can help protect you against break-ins, fires, and carbon monoxide. 24/7 emergency response when you need it most. More at ADT.com.
I'm Linda Holmes. There's more stuff to watch these days than you can ever get to. That's why we make Pop Culture Happy Hour. Twice a week, we give you the lowdown on what's worth your time and what's not. Find Pop Culture Happy Hour on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcasts.
David in Grand Rapids, Michigan emailed, just curious to learn how the president plans to stop air pollution at state borders. How high will the wall around West Virginia need to be to keep their power plant emissions in that state? Got a number of comments from several of you referencing West Virginia, including from TJ, who emailed, having lived in West Virginia for a time, I can say that they have been hurt by the coal industry. The rough and sometimes illegal working conditions create more injuries and spur the opioid epidemic, and the value these workers generate is often taken out of state, making West Virginia progressively poorer. Let's get a perspective on West Virginia for someone who has lived and worked in coal country for quite some time. Joining us on the line now is Jason Bostick, who is the vice president of the West Virginia Coal Association. Jason, welcome to 1A.
Good morning, Joshua. Thank you for having me.
What do you make, before we talk a little bit more about West Virginia specifically, what do you make of this proposed change from the Trump administration, the ACE rule? What do you think?
Well, Joshua, probably the first thing to observe is, unlike the Clean Power Plan, the plan, the ACE plan proposed by the Trump administration is legal in that it keeps EPA in its lane of traffic, if you will, relative to emissions control versus the Clean Power Plan, which would have placed EPA in charge of the entire electricity market in this country from the power plant all the way up to the wall plug. And despite what some of your other guests have said this morning, it was about market manipulation. You can't mandate massive reductions in emissions without some level of market manipulation. You know, coal-fired generation is still relatively affordable, and it was even more affordable before other illegal regulations were promulgated by the Obama administration. And the current situation we find ourselves in the electricity market, it's not so much that natural gas became cheap, it's that coal became so expensive. Other Clean Air Act regulations across the country have driven the cost of coal-fired power up by about 71% across the board.
Can you help me understand the market manipulation argument? I mean, I hear you on one sense in terms of keeping the government in its proper place. On the other hand, government is involved in all kinds of industries, whether it's subsidies to farmers to deal with crop prices or milk prices. I mean, that's not entirely unprecedented. If there is a prevailing national interest in reducing pollution, in doing something about keeping our air clean, what's actually wrong with that?
Well, Joshua, that assumes that Congress had authorized EPA to have that authority, and they didn't. The nation's electric grid is managed by statute, again, by mandate of Congress, by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, not the Federal Environmental Protection Agency. And to install what is an environmental protection agency into a system of balancing electric needs and demand across the country would have turned that system, I think, and many others think, and I also believe the U.S. Supreme Court thought this as well, otherwise they wouldn't have taken the unprecedented step to stay the rule. That's not the role for EPA.
So if it had been coming from FERC rather than EPA, you'd be cool with it?
No, Joshua didn't say that. We have to look at the underlying statutory authority. And again, if Congress intends to give these agencies that power, it certainly knows how to do that. But until that time, then the regulatory agencies, whether it's EPA or FERC or any other one for that matter, needs to stay in their lane of traffic. And the Affordable Clean Energy Rule does that, and actually does it much more effectively, I think, with respect to carbon reduction than the Clean Power Plan would have, by recognizing that the easiest, most surefire way to reduce carbon emissions from coal-fired or other fossil fuel-fired generators is through efficiency improvements. That is, let's extract as much energy as we can for a pound or a ton of coal that you consume, or a million BTU of natural gas, or whatever the fossil fuel might be. It's to extract as much energy as possible from the fuel to supply as much electricity as possible with the lowest possible cost. It's not to mandate Byzantine trading schemes and create imaginary markets for carbon trading that don't exist. To me, that smacks of Enron-type market manipulation.
I wonder if we could get into some of the other concerns about the current path for regulating coal and carbon, including to David's comment regarding air pollution not stopping at state borders. We should note that you've expressed high skepticism in some of the science behind the talk of climate change in the past, but I wonder what your view is in terms of dealing with air pollution, coal, climate change, and whether this rule would help.
I think it will help, Joshua. Let me first, I will acknowledge the fact that as far as man-made climate change and its ability to impact world climate, I am a skeptic. And I'm especially a skeptic when it's approached from a political process standpoint, in that whether it's the Paris Climate Accords or the Clean Power Plan or any of these other international or U.S. approaches where pollution becomes a political issue.
I'm going to stop you there. Let's keep this on a scientific level. I mean, the science for climate change is sound. We're not going to debate that today. What I'm wondering is whether or not you think that the ACE rule would actually help in reducing pollution from coal.
Well, Joshua, first off, you asked me my opinion about the science, and to say that it's sound is also just as much your opinion. But, yes, I do believe.
We're not going to debate the science behind climate change. I'm sorry, sir. We're not going there. There is a consensus internationally from scientists around the world that there is no other vector for the rise in carbon in the atmosphere that would equal the impact of human beings on the environment. That science is solid, and that's a debate for another day. I'm just asking you whether you think that this rule will help.
Yes, sir, I do. I do. I think it acknowledges the best way to control carbon emissions from a fossil fuel fire generating station is through heat efficiency improvements and the deployment of technology that allows that to happen.
Jason, give us a sense of what coal as an industry means to the people who you deal with in West Virginia. We've heard in the past on this program that folks who work in coal mining take a great deal of pride in the work that they have done, and in some cases that their family has done for several generations.
That's absolutely true, Joshua. I myself am a shining example of that. You know, for generations since we came to this country, we've been mining coal somewhere in Appalachia. And it does carry with it a great deal of pride because coal miners are truly skilled craftsmen. And a lot like astronauts, especially when you're an underground coal miner and you're extracting a valuable resource, you're literally going where no man has ever gone before. So there is a great deal of pride attached to that. In addition to that, this is West Virginia. We are the second largest coal-producing state in this country. And we produce both thermal coal for electricity generation and metallurgical coal for the manufacturing of steel. And coal mining is terribly important, not only to the economy, but the taxes that we pay and the economic activity that comes along with mining, because it is such a capital-intensive economic undertaking, supports the government infrastructure here in this state. Mm-hmm. And it also supports the social welfare programs. We kind of weave together the social fabric of West Virginia, both from a heritage standpoint, but also from a daily functionality and funding standpoint.
I know we're low on time, but Joseph Goffman, I wanted to give you a chance to respond to what we've heard, particularly as we look forward to what may be happening with this new ACE rule. Joseph?
Well, I think the important thing to remember about the ACE rule is that it is not a carbon dioxide emission reduction rule, or for that matter, a pollution control rule. There are analyses that have already been published showing that in a number of circumstances, the rule could actually lead to increases in CO2 emissions and in the emissions of other pollutants. I think if the administration were serious about climate change and about some of the issues that Jason raised, it would put in place a framework like the Clean Power Plan that really sent a comprehensive signal about the kind of a transition that needs to be made to move the electricity sector into a position where it's much less pollution intensive and much less carbon intensive, and let technology and the market determine the right mix of technologies in order to achieve that.
And I'm sorry to cut you short, but Coral, I just wanted to hear from you before we go what the next steps are for the affordable clean energy rule. What's the process between now and it possibly being implemented before
right.
we go?
So what was put forth last week by the EPA was a proposed rule. It's a proposal. So now it goes open for public comment for 60 days. The acting administrator of the EPA, Andrew Wheeler, is already kind of doing a little roadshow around the country to sort of pitch it and sell it and try to drum up positive public comments. Once that public comment period has closed, they go back to the drawing board and then they put out a final rule. That's it. That's the rule. But then the next step is, within probably less than 24 hours of that final rule being put out, it will be slammed with lawsuits by at least 20 states, environmental groups, et cetera. Next step then is the Supreme Court, and the Trump administration wants to make sure it rushes that through so it hits the Supreme Court before the end of a first term.
Coral Davenport, who covers energy and the environment for the New York Times, Joseph Goffman, executive director of Harvard's Environmental and Energy Law Program, and Jason Bostic, the vice president of the West Virginia Coal Association, thank you all for joining us. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for listening. This is 1A.